Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin'.
Good to have you with us. It is January 14th, Monday, and we're off to the races in 2013, and things are getting interesting already. CFPB just published the latest guidelines or the rules for QM, qualified mortgage, and we're going to have Alice Alvey on later on in the broadcast. She's going to be on to give us an update during the legislative session, but then we're going to dive into it in deep detail. She's going to cover what's green, the green lights, the yellow lights, caution lights, and the red lights of this whole thing. La, you're going to want to stay tuned all the way through the whole broadcast for what Alice has to share with you on the latest round. We depend on her so much for reading all the guidelines, keeping us informed and trained. So it's good to have you be with us, listeners, each and every week. We thank you so much for joining the thousands, I mean tens of thousands that are tuning in each week to listen to the broadcast, and appreciate you sharing it. Go out to lickinonlending.com, L-Y-K-K-E-N, lickinonlending.com, L-Y-K-K-E-N, onlending.com, and take a look at the website. We've got some new advertisers. Very grateful to have Alamode and the Mercury Network as a sponsor of the broadcast, and appreciate them being a part of us and what we're doing. Also, United Guarantee, good to have them with us as a part of a made a commitment, long commitment to be with, both of them did, to be with us on the broadcast and make this all possible. I want to call attention to that Mortgage Banking Magazine article again that United Guarantee had published that we discussed on the broadcast in December, talking about the marvelous turnaround that United Guarantee has had and all that's going on there with them. So we're thrilled to have them as sponsors. Look forward to get a hold, call your United Guarantee rep and say, hey, heard you're sponsoring the radio program. So glad that you're doing it. Folks, we've got a loaded up program today with all the developments that's happening. We appreciate so many of you dialing in. I'm looking at the switchboard, and it is loaded up. Wouldn't you know, we get Alice to talk about QM, and switchboard loads up. So, but without further ado, let's get in to find out what is going on in the markets. Joe Farr, give us a market update. Good to have you with us, Joe. Happy Monday.
Well, I guess They're not dialing in to listen to the market update, huh?
Well, I think they would always listen to. Of course, that would be all right, but we have a little bit extra large audience.
I understand. It's a big event. All right. So so far today, we're still positive, but we've fallen from the highs of the morning. We opened the morning up about 5:30 on some overnight news out of Japan, where there's been a, I wouldn't call it news, but a hint that they're going to begin a program to buy of buying bonds, including mortgage-backed securities. That put a little push in the price early on, and we've pretty much held that level. We're down a couple 30 seconds from that level. We're beginning to hear the debate on the debt ceiling in earnest. The president held a press conference today, and we didn't see much market movement coming from that, but he did start the public policy debate on the debt ceiling. Maybe the more significant issue today is going to come from Bernanke. He's going to make a speech this afternoon at 4:00, and this is following a pretty interesting comment from the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta President Lockhart. You know, challenging the concept of QE infinitive, saying it's not that, and that there is a bound to it, and that he's generally one of the more moderate of the Fed presidents. And so that debate's really picking up. And you'll remember that's what caused the big drop in MBS prices on the 3rd, I think, of January, when the Fed minutes came out. So, you know, Bernanke's likely to address that in some way today, and I guess that just like it caused a big drop in prices, it could be a market-moving speech this afternoon. Of course, the markets will largely be closed by then, but It's at 4 o'clock Eastern, so we could still see MBS price movement at that time. So
yeah,
be aware of that.
Yeah, we're aware of that. But last week we had the result of that you mentioned earlier of the Treasury and the MBS markets.
Well, last week was kind of a deservedly quiet week after the one before. Very little movement day to day, very little economic activity to be released. No new big headlines out of Washington except for the CFPB announcement, but that had no effect on the MBS market. So last week, basically, we just recovered not quite half of the loss from that first week of the year, and so it was an up week for MBS prices. ECB meeting that was held last week produced no real surprises, and so it was just the Treasury auctions last week also were met with average results, and so it was just pretty much a ho-hum week. Now this week, we have a significant amount of economic activity or economic news to be on the lookout for. Above and beyond the all the politics and the Fed discussion, there are going to be economic announcements tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, that you need to pay attention to. Tomorrow's got PPI and retail sales and the New York Empire State Index, which with PPI and retail sales are more significant. And then on Wednesday, CPI comes out in industrial production, so two more big events along with the Beige Book. And then Thursday's housing starts in Philly Fed, and Friday's the consumer sentiment. So there's a lot to come out. The inflation measures are expected to show small increases, and the economic activity is expected to show, a pickup in economic activity. And so wouldn't expect a big movement associated with those events, but if they miss consensus by much, it could be. Of course, the inflation's always a big concern, but for a while we've had such muted inflation that the market hadn't had to react to it.
Yeah, it hasn't. It is. It's interesting, Joe, that the markets have been, they're 1 week active, another week just relatively inactive. So this is going to be a big week, you're predicting. That's good.
It should be. I mean, it could be. The economic events have not been the driving factors of late. It's been politics and the government action and inaction. So, and again, with the debt ceiling discussion starting up, and we've got at least, a month before the earliest projection for the need to have raised the debt ceiling. Look for that to be an ongoing headline generator and a potential market mover.
What about Europe? Anything that you can see coming out of Europe?
Well, not like this. I mean, not that I'm aware of, Dave. Not anything in the next week or so.
Okay, good. Well, folks, but when the markets react, you got to use MBS Quote Line. If you want to learn how to sign up and become using this service, it's valuable, folks. I get it every day. I get messages from it that's concise, to the point, and it's spot on. You can get a lot of information, or you get the pertinent information. That's what this broadcast is about, and that's what Joe Farr at MBS Quote Line is about. Stay tuned and learn more about how you can sign up and be part of have that as your service. Talk to you soon. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quote Line can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quote Line monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quote Line, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quote Line can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteLine.com to start a risk-free 2-week trial. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us, everybody. It is so important that you tune in with all that's going on. And later in the broadcast, we're going to be talking and diving into the topic of QM, that qualified mortgage rule that just came out from CFPB. And now, Alice, we were just telling everybody why everyone's dialing in, and we almost made Joe a little feel bad. The reality is they dial in to listen to all of us. But we definitely, you do have some pertinent information for us today, Alice. So give us the legislative update. And by the way, you're coming live from New York City, as they say.
Yes,
so
I am.
So appreciate you dialing in on your cell phone before you dive into a bunch of meetings. So good to have you with us, Alice. What do you have?
Well, welcome, everybody. Yes, I know. You know, nothing like having the finally, right? We've been, how long have we been talking about QM and
oh, yeah.
the maybes and the guesswork? So here we are. And here's the best way I think I'm trying to approach this in a methodical way so we can all kind of get our thoughts around how this works, because so many people really just need a simple explanation. That's going to be my goal here in this first segment. So essentially, I came up with this idea of, you know, I've got a green zone, a yellow zone, which is that caution light. You know, if you use the traffic light analogy or picture more or less like a target, I'm going to hit the middle of the target with the green. I've got a yellow caution zone around that, and then I have the red zone, right?
Yep.
So in what we were given with this QM, we've got what are the factors it takes for me to be in the green zone, and the green zone being I'm essentially in a safe harbor in the event the borrower goes into foreclosure that they would not automatically be able to sue me for not documenting their ability to repay the loan. The yellow zone being this, it's a caution. You're outside of the immediate QM because you've triggered a high-priced mortgage loan, which is the 1.5% above the average prime offered rate. That puts you in this yellow zone where you say, well, now my customer in the event of foreclosure may have some better legal footing to stand on to be able to come back and sue and say, well, did the lender really do everything that they should have in order to support that I could repay this loan? The other aspect of all of this is obviously QRM, right? The risk retention piece, which that's another show. So
as
of now, we're not dealing with the risk retention issue. We're just dealing with, did I hit the green mark? Am I sitting in the yellow zone, or am I outside of that even, and I'm truly just in a red zone where I didn't meet other requirements of a qualified mortgage? So if you get that kind of scope, I think, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later about how it impacts the market, but I want to just start with in that green zone, what it looks like we know so far is a few things. We do know that it appears that a loan that receives an approved eligible from Fannie or Freddie as of today appears to meet that qualified mortgage definition. So those of you who are very concerned about a 43% DTI guideline, at least with an approved eligible from the system, I've met my data entry accurately, which we'll talk about later, then I meet that green zone QM. The toss-up is going to be FHA refer loans, and we can talk about that. In that green zone, I have a fully documented file. I have made sure I've met all of the agency's requirements. But now I have this points and fees test that starts to have some added dynamics, which we'll talk about. They're looking at how do I calculate the loan officer compensation within that? What points and fees are included? And we'll definitely be spending some more time on that in the Hot Topics segment. But right now, it looks like there's definitely a difference between how broker points and fees are going to be calculated versus creditor. And it does look like loan officer compensation in a creditor scenario with borrower-paid compensation, that there could be that LO comp is included in this calculation for determining did I move out of the green zone and I'm now in the yellow zone. There are tiers for the points and fees cap. There's also a 3-point cap, but there are some tiers for lower loan amounts. So that's definitely going to help, and we're still, you know, dissecting all of the math on that. Some of the other things that people are watching is, you know, in terms of being concerned about it is, okay, if I'm over a 43 DTI and anything I manually underwrite, that's definitely going to be outside of the green zone and I'm in the yellow zone. Small creditors kind of get a little magnet to go in the green zone, right? Where they're looking for some comments from the industry to see if small creditors who work in rural markets, underserved markets, you know, not a ton of their business is coming from residential mortgages, can they have an exemption for some of the criteria in here. Now, the other thing that's pending is whether or not nonprofits such as Habitat for Humanity should be exempt from all this. One other point I want to make as we look at what's in the green zone and what's in the yellow zone, the biggest issue, like I just mentioned, is going to be that calculation of what is the APR calculation for putting me in the yellow zone in the HPML. And so one of the good news things that they're commenting on is PMI, private mortgage insurance, and MIP costs are not being included in that. And bona fide discount points up to about 2 points will also not be included in that. So there's definitely a lot to dissect where people are crunching numbers right now to see where their loads are going to fall and if they like the idea of being in the yellow zone. So that's been my quick synopsis of it for right now, Dave, and I'm looking forward to Bill's segment because I know he's got a lot of kind of man-on-the-street good links that people need to hear about. So I'm dissecting the regulation. I know Bill's going to give us some details on, you know, what's going on in the markets reacting to this.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into that. I want to say, Alice, thank you so much. And again, this has been Alice Alvia, Mortgage U. She can be reached at. You got to get a hold of her. If you've got training needs, you've got to get a hold of Alice. Reach her at 248-737-0366 at the office. She is just – and go check out the website, www.mortgage-u, www.mortgage-u.com. Can't go wrong getting Alice in there. She is just – we refer into so many of our clients. We get so many positive comments. Alice, thank you so much, and I can't wait to have you on the Hot Topic segment and diving in and dissecting the yellow zone, the green zone, and that forbidden red zone. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief comment.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin'.
Good to have you back with us. You know what? There's so many wonderful news agencies and resources out there. And I had the privilege this last week. I was out in Washington, D.C. Got to sit down with Guy Sakala of Inside Mortgage Finance, Mortgage Trends, Inside Mortgage Anything. I mean, it's just the IMF, Inside Mortgage Finance. It's just a brilliant publication that's out there and does such a great job. John Bancroft is the editor of it. And Paul Mollo, who used to be with the National Mortgage News, just moved over and joined Guy, and they're launching something new and exciting. I can't wait to tell you all about it. I hope to have get Paul on the broadcast here in the near future to talk about this. So you're going to want to stay tuned to future broadcasts. Paul Mollo has joined Inside Mortgage Finance, and they publish so many things. And so I got to have some time to enjoy some company with Guy Sakala and Paul Mollo while out in D.C. this last week. So some exciting stuff coming up. Also, a great resource to many of you is the Mortgage and News Clips blog that Bill Coppedge writes. And he's been gracious enough to come on and provide us kind of the everything that we can't get covered in the broadcast, kind of give us and make us aware of where to go. By the way, so Bill Coppedge is also with Faye Servicing, a specialty servicing company. We're going to be talking with them when we do our servicing update on everything servicing in the month of February. We hope to have them all on, but we get to have Bill on each and every week kind of updating us on what's going on. Bill Coppedge, good to have you with us, and I'm scrambling to turn on your mic. I just realized I didn't do that. There, we got you live, Bill.
Hey, I've been unmuted. All right.
You've been unmuted. You've never been muted,
I'm
man.
Free.
You're out there providing a wealth of information. Again, you're up at O'Dark 100 reading the news. You got a lot of stuff. And what's most valuable, Bill, what you do is all these links, these clips. You just go to one website, and you have all these links. So give it to us today. What you got for us?
I have four things for you. I have two papers I found, some stuff about robo-signing, and finally I will touch upon QM, and I look forward to hearing Alice's follow-up. Okay, the two papers I found this week. The first one is at Mortgage Orb, and it is a 2013 mortgage industry forecast, and it makes 5 points. I'll tell you the 5 points very quickly. Originations are going to drop this year.
Yeah.
30-year fixed rate will go over 4% by the third quarter of the year. mortgage industry employment is going to drop 100,000 in the next 12 to 18 months.
Oh.
Purchase business will eclipse refi business. So get your guns in order and get ready for purchase business. And finally, something that I'm guilty of, and I think you too, Dave, the industry is graying or aging, especially in secondary marketing and senior management ranks.
That'll be an interesting article to read, and you have a link to that on your website that we're going to give information about in just a minute.
Sure.
What's the second paper?
Okay, the second paper, the Heritage Foundation discusses the economic effects if you eliminated the GSEs. And it's a long paper. It has a lot of good stuff in it, but their bottom line is that even if they were eliminated 10 years from now, it won't make much of a difference. The private sector will come in. My opinion is that the GSEs will be around in 10 years because of this QM rule that talks about safe harbor mortgages.
Yeah.
And I really think that's about what mostly people are going to originate, and that's the GSEs are going to be the main liquidity for that, so they'll still be here in 10 years.
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting about that because Guy Sokala of the Inside Mortgage Finance was quoted in many of you get the or read the USA Today, he was quoted in that, and he says, talking about the fact that it's hard to get loans now, tightening of credit, what will be the impact? It was asked as a question, as a statement, but it's a bit rhetorical in the way the statement was made. So it'll be interesting to get what's going on, and interesting the GSEs are going to be around. So that's the second point. What's the third item you have for us?
Okay. The third and fourth items are two special posts that I put out this morning. I do these every now and then where I go into great depth on a subject, and I have a lot of things you can go look at, and that is the robo-signing settlement. Elijah Cummings is the head of the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, and I guess the OCC and the Fed did not bother to consult Congress before announcing the robo-settlement. So Elijah wasn't very happy about that, and he basically said that it could allow the banks to sweep abuses of the past under the rug.
Wow.
And then I also found another article on robo-signing that's in the special post, and it is written by an attorney who defends third-party originators on repurchases. And he says that the robo-settlement is utter hypocrisy.
Yeah.
That banks are blaming the correspondents for making bad loans for their problems, yet these same banks are the ones who did the robo-signing. And robo-signing caused foreclosures, that should have never happened. So how can you blame the correspondents for making bad loans when the bank's robo-actions caused a wrongful foreclosure? So anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And then my last of the four things is a special post about QM, and I think this will complement nicely what Alice has. Last Friday, I had a special post called QM, a quick and dirty summary.
Right.
And this morning, I have a follow-up that had six links in it.
Last week it had six. This week you have.
Yeah, this morning I put out one that has 12 additional links about QM, including the original. Go to the CFPB. There are three major documents you can read about it. A lot of other stuff too. So those two posts will give you a ton of reading about it.
Well, that is there's so much, and that's the thing that what you do is just so valuable, Bill. Is you really link all the articles, because you're up at no dark hundred, as I say, and you're up there reading the articles, and you've got a brilliant analysis, a field of view of all the articles that are out there, and you really make it so easy. So for those that get your blog each and every week, and David Stevens endorsed it by saying he reads it all the time, and the fact that you put everything into one spot where you can click on one link and then go out from there clicking on the various articles and they get it. So 13 additional loon links on QM. Wow. I can't wait to click on those. That sounds like I got my reading set up for me for a little while.
Sure. So anyway, that's really it. I mean, I could go into a couple more things, but I think Alice is going to be doing that.
Yeah.
So I have a couple of papers for you, and I have a couple of very special posts that go into great depth on robo-signing and also QM.
I thank you so much, Bill, for being a part of the broadcast each and every week. And if you want to read more and click through to his links, go to the Lickin' on Lending website. Click on whichever the featured broadcast is, and as that comes up, just to the right of that is the click-through ad. You have an ad for mortgage news clips and face servicing, And you click on that, it'll go directly right into Mortgage News Clips. Or if you prefer, go over to www.mortgagenewsclips.com and you can click through to us. So either way, you can get to us or to Bill through those various websites. Bill, thanks so much for taking time out of your busy day. And can't wait to have you back next week with more click-through stories that we just don't have time to cover. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it so much.
Okay. Good week, everyone.
You bet. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us. The Profit Doctor is out doing health calls again, so we miss him. I can't wait to have him back on the broadcast. I talked to him. He said to say hello to everybody and says, I miss being on the broadcast. He'll be back with something rather meaty and substantive next week is what he says. But we have Tony Garitano with us again this week. And, Tony, it's good to have you on the broadcast.
Good to be here, Dave.
You bet. Well, Tony, I mean, I think you're known as Mr. Technology. You've been covering technology for years. And I think the key to any successful relationship is having proper expectations. And in a world that is changing at the rate that it is, what should be realistic expectations that lenders should have of their technology vendors? I mean, how do you establish that?
Well, you know, I think if we could put Alice in a nice box and throw her into every LOS, that would be great for the industry.
But I
think that my main point is that in saying that is that every technology vendor has to be held to the utmost compliance standard, and that's obviously the hot button item. You need to expect your technology vendors to keep you up to date on compliance and to keep you lending in a compliant fashion. And if they're not, then you need to be looking elsewhere.
Yeah, and I mean, there are benefits to allowing your technology vendor to kind of dictate the process, I would assume. Is that inaccurate?
I think so. I mean, especially now, Dave, I mean, I think in the past, a lot of lenders were not comfortable with vendors dictating the process. They wanted the technology to morph to their process.
Right.
But with all of these new rules, with all of these new regulations coming out, I think you're seeing that lenders are more open to hearing how the vendor deals with X, Y, and Z. And the reason why I say that is because we just reported this morning on progressinlending.com about the total loan quality initiative that Ellie Mae has, for example.
Right, yeah.
I mean, if you can get an investor to come into your LOS and give your LOS their blessing and say, look, if you do a loan this way, electronic using, in this case it's Encompass, but it doesn't necessarily have to be Encompass. It could be another technology solution too. You know, then you know that you have what Ellie Mae is calling total loan quality. And I think that that's the direction that we're going in as an industry if secondary providers and outside investors are going to come back.
I think it's a great point. I mean, the partnership with technology is your technology vendor has never been more critical than now, Tony, especially with QM coming out and putting, as Alice, you're going to hear a minute, you know, the green zone, the yellow zone, or the amber zone, the watch out zone, and then, of course, the red zone. I mean, it's really, really, really critical that you have technology that kind of helps you on that. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day to be with us, Tony, and give us some thoughts on technology and what's going on. It's getting to be more and more important, Tony, all along.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Always a pleasure. You can go out to the website, www.progressinlending.com. And, of course, you can always get a hold of Tony Garitano and discuss your technology needs at 203-529-3131. Tony, thank you so much. Have a great day and a great rest of the week. And look forward to having you back next week.
Thank you.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel's Trot can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel's Trot has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel's Trot can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel's Trot represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel's Trot today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel's Trot, the single source solution for your quality control needs.
And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
It is good to have you back with us. And, you know, Joe, I got to give you a bad time because I make a comment like everyone tunes in to listen to Alice about the QM, and I get emails from fans from you. And the messages rolled in saying, hey, Lickin', we listen to Joe just as much as anybody, but we love Alice. We love the whole show. It's the whole program. In fact, I was Belinda Humphreys, who's out there and listening to the broadcast today, is one of our listeners. She walked up to me at the conference in Chicago. She goes, I love your broadcast. So, Joe, that happens to you. You know everybody loves you, and we all love Alice. And it's great. I really appreciate everyone's contribution to this broadcast because it is really a collaborative effort. So let's get Alice back here. And, Alice, you start outlining some bullseye. There's a bullseye which got a nice green sweet spot right in the middle, and there's this other outer circle that's kind of this amber. Okay, you can play here, but here's some of the caution zone. And then there's that big red zone out there. So kind of walk our listeners through that, Alice. What do you mean by those three zones? And kind of cover it, and then Joe and I are going to start peppering you with questions.
Well, I know. I would say, first of all, I forgot to mention the effective date. We have a year, so it is January 10th
that's
of 2014, and so we're going to assume that's the application date. Folks have also noticed in here that there's this deadline within the rule for how long Fannie and Freddie loans will be automatic QM, and there is a date out there, which is January 10th of 2021. That's really hard to say, but it's really 7 years from now. And 7 years from now, it ends. You know, this exemption for Fannie approved eligibles, and I'm assuming that simply means they're anticipating Fannie and Freddie will be resolved, and we'll take a look at it then. So I can't panic about 7 years from now. but maybe the first place to start is the points and fees threshold. You know, I just wanted to give folks the detail. Make sure you understand there are tiers to this. So for a loan amount greater than or equal to $60,000 but less than $100,000, it's a $3,000 test. For a loan amount greater than or equal to $20,000 but less than $60,000, so you're between $20,000 and $60,000, it's a 5% of the total loan amount. And for loans between $12,500 and $20,000, you've got a $1,000 flat fee. And for loans less than $12,500, it's 8%. So there's these multiple tiers, and essentially the 3 points comes into play for our loans that are over $100,000 or higher.
Yeah. Okay.
So I know some folks have been concerned about who is this going to impact. Our lower price range borrowers going to be hit the hardest? And I don't know, Joe, what do you think about those pricing tiers? I know I kind of rattled them off fast, but we get a little room in there anyway, it seems.
Yeah, and Alice, I didn't follow that. Sometimes it sounded like there was a percentage, and sometimes there was a dollar amount. So are those mostly in dollar amounts? So it's
it is a balance. Some are a flat fee, and others are a percentage.
So let's go through this real quickly. So it is a 12,000 to what, 25, did you say?
So it's for a loan amount greater than or equal to $60,000 but less than $100,000, it's a $3,000 amount.
So that's a dollar amount. You know, okay.
You're getting a little more than your 3% between $60,000 and $100,000.
Okay.
And then once you're equal to $20,000 but less than $60,000, you get a 5%. And then for a loan amount greater than or equal to $12,500 but less than $20,000, of course, there's a small group of companies that can even originate that and make any money today anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's $1,000. And for a loan amount less than $12,500, it goes up to 8% of the loan amount. Of course, then you're triggering Section 32 almost. You know, you get a whole new...
A whole new bucket there, yeah.
So, so that's, you know, the thresholds are there, and I know lenders are going to be crunching the numbers to see what happens based on their pricing models with those.
So under
and
12,
Alistair,
go ahead, Al. Joe, go ahead.
While we're on the points and fees, as we talked about in the pre-show, there's some big questions about what's included and what's not, and how that might affect brokers versus how that might affect lenders, and do we know the answer to any of those questions yet?
Well, I think we're definitely spending a lot of time dissecting it. You know, the attorneys are in there with every single, you know, reference to every nook and cranny of the regulation. And what I do have is when you define loan originator compensation, they're including commissions, you know what, and even trips, bonuses, but not their salary. So when you say loan originator compensation is now going to be part of how this amount is calculated to determine if I end up in the yellow zone, that's the area I'm going to have to defer to say, we can talk about that in more detail in the next show, because it does appear that, you know, the broker side is coming out a little bit better on this, because obviously their compensation coming from the lender is essentially in the APR in a lot of cases, and then in the retail environment for creditor paying a loan originator, it seems like there's some extra money we're going to have to put in to calculate, am I over the threshold?
So
it's a different approach to the calculation.
Yeah.
I had understood it kind of being the opposite, where the brokers were screaming foul and that their full fee, which is not only broker compensation but costs of operating expenses, et cetera, was going to be included, whereas lenders maybe not so much.
Well, we'll spend some time calculating it. Like I said,
yeah.
I'm going to defer on that one, because I was reading an interpretive piece, you know, from the interpretation, the official interpretations that go with this. In those examples, that's how it was reading. But definitely, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a hit to both sides.
So it definitely does cover it. So we're going to be covering more on the LO compensation component next week, is what you're telling. We'll be able to get into more detail on that.
Yeah, that we're going to have to spend some more time on dissecting. So it is a difference in how this amount is going to be calculated. That is such a critical concept, and there are multiple components to that, not just this compensation piece, but also the mortgage insurance piece, like I referenced earlier. And like I said, it takes a lot of attorneys to kind of drill down to exactly which sections, play with some numbers, and see how this is going to come out. And really, that's what we're still doing as an industry on that component.
That's really interesting. I want to say, did I hear you say earlier, because I'm just digesting this, and it's also a hook to get people to come back and listen next week. Not that we need that. I mean, we always want more people coming back. But did you say that trips are now going to be included in that? So like national sales events are calculated back in there?
Well, that's got to get explained, right? How far does that go? And when in the definition section of loan originator compensation, what is included, that was listed in that definition. Now, how it's applied, again, we still have to work through all the details.
Well, yeah, that's. I can't wait to get all the way through this. Okay, so let's continue on. So what are some of the other notable things that you have for us today that we should be paying attention to?
I would like to talk about the 43 DTI aspect as well.
Yeah.
What I found interesting in the 800 pages, you know, again, depending on which version you have, there was almost an exact copy of the underwriting guidelines from FHA. So when you say well, what is a 43 DTI, right? How do I get to that number? There are lots of factors involved. And I always joke around that even in our world today, we have underwriters who are born with a gene to find the lowest possible income figure in a file, and then they drop it by 5%, right? So you're already dealing with, I think as an industry, we've kind of gotten very conservative on income, but now you put underwriting guidelines in this federal document, and it for the most part, it comes straight from FHA, but there are some nuances. So when the regulation says you generally should use 2 years of overtime, periods of less than 1 year may be considered acceptable provided you document it adequately. Okay, so I close a loan, I think I documented adequately, and someone decides I didn't, and now my DTI is 44. What happens, right, Joe? What is the consequence?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's kind of like an appraisal. Getting that DTI is almost a work of art. Kind of like an appraisal is a work of art. And one might say it's 43, and another might say, no, it's 42 and a half, or somebody might say it's 44. And
right.
So it strikes me as odd that, the industry now has a finite number, but it's a subjective one to get to. So it's still going to create some difficulties.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, as you kind of look at, then what are debts, right? So, you know, loan officers in their bag of tricks always have the, can I pay a debt down to less than 10 months in order to meet the debt ratio, right? My customer gets a gift, we're trying to get rid of the car payment, and then we get the debt ratio to work. And so now, is that acceptable? When you read the guide, they only picked up a section of it and basically said, you know, debts lasting less than 10 months may be excluded provided the borrower has the compensating factors. I'll abbreviate. Well, that's the message that is out there for manually underwritten loans. We're used to when I get an approved eligible, if I left that debt out, I'm okay. I meet the guideline on an FHA. So my question is, all right, if am I following manual underwriting rules or automated underwriting rules to meet QM? And does that mean I have to count every debt now? Same with student loans. On FHAs in particular, do I have to count all this in order for the AUS findings to be considered valid under this regulation? I have a lot of questions still on this component.
And there's exclusions. I mean, the various exclusions, Fannie Mae eligible, the DULP. What are some of the factors that go into this? I mean, you say that they're filing more of the FHA calculations for DTI, is the way it sounds like.
Right. Whereas with Fannie and Freddie, it's a straight up. You don't have to count something if it's, you don't have to count installment debt if it's less than 10 months. Right, right. You have to count all your revolving. We know that. But
yes.
So that's the difference. It's taking FHA guidelines and applying it to everything.
I had just someone email me a question for you, Alice, and they said, does this add clarity or is this going to bring confusion? The fact that Bill has 13 links to 13 articles out there would suggest there might be some more confusion about this. Based on your analysis and what you've read, one of our listeners wants to know, is this simplifying things or is this just creating another big cloud where we're just having to worry about more litigation?
Well, I think, you know, if you say I'm willing to follow what it says in the rule and I'm going to take the most conservative approach, you can draw a bright line. But competitively, that changes the group of borrowers that applied for a loan. So you can define, an underwriter would go, oh, this is great. It's all in print now, federal law, you know. But if I put my sales hat on, I think it causes problems because, as we all know, underwriting has its gray areas. And, you know, does this take away the ability to work within that, especially on my FHA refers?
Go ahead. Joe, let me just put this out. For those of you that want to text me with your question, text me to 512-632-2900, and I'll put it on the air right away. 512-632-2900. We'll get the questions out to Alice, and again, we'll be covering more about LO Comp. So no LO Comp questions this week. We'll have those next week. Alice, Joe, go ahead.
Well, the question I had would be that because it's a gray area and it's a gray number, don't you think some people are going to build in a cushion? So instead of saying 43, you know, I'm going to set my internal guidelines to say 40 or 41. I don't know if that builds in enough cushion, but do you think that's going to kind of take hold? And I guess that's one question. Then the reason I ask that is, and we probably ought to bring up, what are the dire consequences if you're not a qualified mortgage?
Right. So, okay, so for the
is
first
the
part about
too?
Where do you think lenders will stand, that's why I came up with the green, the yellow, and the red, because
right.
every lender has their comfort zone of when you make a box, how close to the middle do they want to be, or are there other companies that don't mind teetering on the edge and pushing envelopes? And so I think you may have lenders out there that say, I don't have any confidence. I don't want any consequences. I have a zero tolerance for consequences, and so I am going to be more conservative. You'll have others that say, wow, I read this as business as usual for underwriting because I'm already handling that appropriately. I think I'm documenting it just fine, and they may say I'm not going to make any changes. But as you point out, I may be in the green zone from an APR standpoint, but do I cross over inadvertently in an audit? You know, if my QC company says, hey, you calculated income wrong, and this is now a 45, now
right. Yeah. Yeah, and so one of the questions that just came to me, Dave, is this really better for the attorneys, or is this going to be really good for the borrowers as far as opening up? I think they're two separate questions. I mean, does this really tighten credit for the consumers out there that are trying to get mortgage loans in the coming years?
Well, if we didn't have a year to implement it, I would say, yeah, everybody's going to panic to the, you know, to the most conservative point until the first companies start getting audited and they see what the consequences will be. So, Joe, as you and I were talking about before the show, the consequences for me, if I called something a QM and then now it's not a QM, it's a result of some type of post-closing review, I'm going to be bound contractually to have to notify somebody, right? I'm going to have to notify the entity that I sold the loans to, and what is the penalty going to be for that, right?
Right. Likely repurchase. Yeah.
Right. I do potentially then have repurchase risk with this if I said it was a QM and now I'm finding out it's not a QM. So you'll have lenders who want to be conservative, or maybe everybody's going to sit down with their underwriters and say, okay, here's how this is going to have to work. But since we have a year, I'm assuming we'll get lots of seminars.
Oh, yeah. You're going to be busy, Alice.
Well, you know, it's going to take some time to hear exactly what CFPB says on some of these very granular issues on executing this on a daily basis.
Just got a text message. I just got a test message, then we'll go to you, Joe. One of them says, how many pages is this rule? Do you have any idea?
Just the main rule, depending on which way you're printing it, it's between 600 and 800 pages. And then there are a couple of other rules that are running concurrently, which we'll report on in future shows. We've got time to talk about those without making your head spin. Those are adding a few more hundred pages. So we're generally calling it about 1,000 pages of information that have to get looked at.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's certain amount of ambiguity to it, so there's going to be a lot of care. But like you say, we got a year to digest this, and before it goes into effect, and then that can seem like an eternity. But boy, it's got some strong consequences for not. Joe, you started saying something, and I interrupt you. Apologize.
Well, I was going to, remembering back on the post issuance of the LO comp rules and all the discussion that went along with how do you interpret this? How does it fit in this and this scenario? I sure see all that working out the same way with this rule.
Yeah, I mean, look at, and even RESPA, right? How many frequently asked questions did we get following that? And, and we still have different areas where companies are trying to get to the bottom of it. And this has such severe consequences in relationship to any of those other two because of the automatic or potential automatic repurchase risk. So I think, you know, the granular level of the underwriting to me is one area. The loan officer compensation calculations is going to be a very significant one, and how to actually calculate that APR. Now, when you look at the rules, there are pages of how to work with prepayment penalties, ARM loans, and other types of programs that have a lot of complexity in, you know, how to qualify the customer on a payment 5 years from now. So, you know, right now, obviously, everybody's main product is 30-year fixed rates, but you have to take a look at these. You know, you mentioned rates might be going up, right? If rates go up, we could be very well in an arm market, and that's not going to be the time to pull out the rule and go, oh, my gosh, I didn't realize that was going to have all these consequences in how this is calculated.
Right, yeah.
There's all that level. Yeah.
One person, ask Alice if it kills the arm market. So that's one I think you almost touched on a little bit. Do you read anything that says this is just going to cause for the arm market to never really come back, or is there provisions for that?
Well, I think definitely your 1 and your 3 year arm products, you know, where it was the advantage of getting the customer in for a lower rate. If from a qualifying standpoint, I have to try and predict out 5 years. Now, you know, again, worst case scenario, fully indexed.
Those are all complicated
analyses, but ultimately, it could have a big impact on customers. You're not going to do it for qualifying purposes. It would only be because the customer wants to save the money.
Yeah, remember, folks, if you want to get me to get a question into Alice, write down cell phone. Just text me. That's how I'm getting most of these. 512-632-2900. Text me with your questions. I'll get them over to Alice. Alice, one other question just came in. Do you, based on your read on this, and Joe, love your thoughts, is, in fact, they asked for your thoughts, Joe, is do you see this giving the advantage to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac continuing there? Is this, or does this, and effectively shut the door on getting the private MBS market back and running? Are we going to see the private investors leery of getting involved with this new QM rule?
Joe, I'll let you take that. Yeah.
Okay. Certainly the private investor, unless Fannie Mae prices like a private investor, which they are working toward. But more, I see this as the opportunity or quite frankly, the need to retain the ability to, as Jeb Hensarling calls it, cajole the industry to make loans that they wouldn't make otherwise. You know, that's what all the exceptions, once the rule was put out, the unintended consequences were anticipated, meaning those loans being done under the housing project programs maybe aren't going to be able to be done anymore. And so the exceptions are beginning to come already. Whether or not Fannie and Freddie are going to, and Fannie and Freddie and FHA will be the facility through which they can do that for the next 7 years by just simply changing underwriting guidelines for certain circumstances.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Right. So if they really bring back the ability to originate more my community mortgages, or there's exceptions in there that they're going to be addressing for the Refi Plus, you know, relief refi programs. So as you said, Joe, they're already looking at exceptions to these rules, and we'll end up with a lot of loans. It'll be tough to keep track of, okay, is this an exception or not? It'll take a lot of organization on the lender's part to make sure you've got your products coded right.
Oh, yeah, and there's small lender programs where they make less than something like 500 loans a year. They're not obliged by it. And then it goes on to talk about in rural areas. So a small lender in a metropolitan area versus small lender in a rural area may have different rules.
Well, and I think the credit unions are really taking a long look at this, because a lot of credit unions like that balloon product. You know, it's their way of being able to reset the interest rate, and I kind of joke without calling it an arm, but it works for them. And there are a lot of caveats about balloons because, generally speaking, a loan that's not fully amortized is not a QM. And so now you've got to go back and take a look at how can I structure my balloon product in complete compliance with this, get my small creditor status. You know, I want to know, do you get like a pin with that? How does that work? Where you get, I get a sign on my door, a little sticker, I'm a small creditor, no QM required here. How does that work?
Well, it's interesting because it's going to open up some marketing opportunities. I mean, for those that are willing to really study this. And I think that's where people are going to do is where are the opportunities for differentiation, market differentiation?
Well, and think about what the regulator's view of a non-QM, a portfolio of non-QM loans is going to be, though. I mean, don't you anticipate they'd come in and they'd want to look long and hard at why it is you're making non-QM loans that are okay?
Right. So now you have to be able to defend every characteristic of that loan. And a lot of companies, a lot of the small rural lenders, because I do a lot of that consultation for that group, a lot of them might use automated underwriting as a tool to help them gauge the risk. And then from there, they don't go along and meet all of the findings or feedback, and they kind of follow their own portfolio guidelines from that point. And a lot of them, it's a credit committee who goes, does this look like this customer is going to pay us back? You know, so I think they're going to have to put a little more in writing to be able to make sure they're watching. Does it still end up being a QM, or do they not care because they're not selling it and they're already got 100% risk retention? I mean, there's a point, Joe. Do I care if I'm a small community lender, if I have a whole bunch of non-QM?
That was my point. I think the regulators are going to care that your portfolio is made up of non-QM loans. And that's going to put them in a category that says, well, you know, we need to look at these closer.
Right. And they're,
and that,
you know,
just means people are going to say, get away, stay away from it. So it's some of the comments are coming in. So it sounds like this is, if I'm reading the texts as I'm talking to you guys and listening to you visit on this, is some are saying it sounds like we're going to be finding ourselves more restrictive guidelines and more of a fear to go out and really do creative products.
Well, because the two, a lot of this is going to be lagging, right? And so you may say you think you're fine maintaining the underwriting standards that you have today for income calculations, you know, and maybe on an FHA making an exception for 22 months of overtime instead of 24, you know, details like that. And you're not going to know until you see the performance of those loans, because and you have the QM aspect of, I think it's a QM, they're paying. Well, the minute you get proven wrong is the minute they become late.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
I think there's some servicing standards that people have to take a look at and setting some protection measures. And if my customer starts to become a slow payer, you know, and somebody diving in immediately to assess QM compliance.
Wow. Yeah, it looks like they're going to be going back. One quick question, this will be the last one we'll take, and then we're going to talk about next week. Is the rural product or the rural loan lending programs that are out there, and does this have that as an exclusion?
You mean like RD, rural
yes,
development?
Yes, RD. Yes, rural.
Yeah,
rural.
If you're in compliance, if the loan is going to meet Fannie, Freddie, FHA, VA, or RD, then you're fine. You're meeting a QM loan, assuming you calculated everything correctly. Then you would be in the green zone.
You'd be in the green zone. Okay, so let's cover those. The green zone is clearly those products that are in there. And your sense, Alice, at this point of the product that was done in 2012, how much of it is going to be inside the green zone? Just a rough guess.
Oh, I don't know if I could shoot from the hip on that. I would say the majority of lenders out there who sell to the big aggregators are only closing approved eligibles. There are definitely a percentage of lenders still closing FHA refers, and there's definitely a large percentage of portfolio lenders. So I guess I don't have a magic answer for you on the entire market as a whole.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but I think that's what everyone's trying to anticipate.
It's a big percentage, though.
Yeah, it is. It's going
to
be.
Yeah, most loan officers go, oh, good, I'm fine. Approve eligible is good. And then they go back to answering the phone and emails.
Right. Yeah. And then like Joe, your point, I mean, what defines approve eligible? It's a program. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Then we got a year to react to it. Next week, we're going to be getting in talking about the LO compensation aspects of it. Alice, do you have anything, again, you want to tease our listeners on to have to make sure we get them all back to dial into the LO comp components of QM?
Well, I think we're definitely going to work to get a well-known attorney on the show. We'll make every effort to see if we can get some legal help on that one, because that one, I think, has a lot of parts to touch it, you know, in terms of compensation.
It is going to be, without question, one of those things where a lot of people are going to be focusing on, how does this impact my pay? So
and
we've gone through a lot of
things.
Yes, Joe.
If we do get that attorney on, and I think it's important to answer the question of why it is you want to work so hard to make it a QM loan, or why it is you want to work so hard to avoid a non-QM loan.
Yeah, exactly.
Because my understanding is that there are foreclosure risks and penalties that go along with, if you've made a loan that doesn't meet the ability to repay standards, then they're pretty major penalties.
And
to talk about those penalties.
Yeah, we want to get into that. And then we also want to talk about the servicing. What impacts does this have on servicers? So it sounds like there's a lot to talk about. We may be talking about QM for the parts on and off for a good chunk of the year as we get this figured out. So, folks, we appreciate you being with us on the broadcast. Be sure to check out all our previous broadcasts by going to Lickin' on Lending, www.lickinonlending.com. You can also check us out on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. Love to have you there. We got the LO Compensation LinkedIn discussion group. Still as live and hot as ever. Just proved 25 more participants for that one. Stay tuned. We'll be back. I mean, don't stay tuned. Come back and listen to us next week. We appreciate you tuning in. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you soon.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.